Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And most recently, we've been focusing on a thing I've called the art of intimacy. The art of intimacy, the attempt to try to get closer to other people, and what it takes to do it. Now, there's a lot of theories out there. I received another book today which said you got to match your partner. If you and your partner match in different abilities and different senses, if things match between the two of you, you're going to get along better. Mismatches don't work. But then there's another point of view. This other point of view is the one that I'm looking at, which has to do with a new form of intimacy or a different form of intimacy that's a step above what most people usually are satisfied with. Most people find intimacy is the kind of a thing where two people get together and they hang out and they feel safe with each other and they're just having a good time. And that it's mostly relaxing and, you know, if there are any difficult issues, you kind of leave them in the back burner. You don't challenge each other. You get along. You bring up the kids. You have two cars and a nice house. And that's it. And then you wait for grandchildren. Well, that's okay. That's a pretty nice thing. I say that that's, if you're lucky to get that in life, you're lucky. If you're lucky to even get out of the gutter, you know, if you're born in some of the worst stuff and you get above that and you're not just repeating what your parents did, you know, beating up the kids to try to teach them what's right and what's wrong, torturing children, which is part of what the style has always been in one form or another, torturing them intellectually by giving them performance levels they've got to reach to. If you're not doing that, you know, and you've got a family, you're lucky. But is that enough? Well, for some people, it's not. Some people you just can't satisfy. Greedy people. Greedy people say, and I want to be happy. Well, aren't you happy enough that you've got a family? And you go, no, I want to be happy. I want to feel like I count. I want to feel like I am me. I want to not just be a pair, one of two. I want to be me in this relationship. And what that requires is I need to tell you who I am. I need to be with someone who knows who I am. So there's one way of getting through your life. You know, you get through your life and your tombstone says, in effect, never knew me. Or, only a few knew me, but they loved me. Can you let somebody know you? Can you let somebody in? Can you let somebody really get to see who you are? And not only can you let them, but do you want to? Well, that's the beauty. See, the beauty is being known. The beauty is being seen. And I want to help you get a more chance of doing that yourself. You know, of being able to be known and being able to be seen. One way I remember is a poem. Always a favorite of mine. Let me see if I can find that for you. This is a poem. This is a poem, just a little bit. Would you find it? About friendship. Now here, I'm going to read you this poem. It's about friend. It's by C. Raymond Barron. What is a friend? It's a person with whom you dare to be yourself. Your soul can be naked with him or her. They seem to ask of you to put on nothing, only to be what you are. They do not want you to be better or worse. When you're with your friend, you feel as a prisoner feels who's been declared innocent. You do not have to be on your guard. You can say what you think, so long as it's genuinely you. Your friend understands these contradictions in your nature that lead you to misjudge you. With your friends, you breathe freely. You can avow your little vanities and envies and hates and meannesses and absurdities. In opening up to them as your friend, you're lost, dissolved on the wide ocean of their loyalty. A friend understands. You do not have to be careful. You can abuse them, neglect them, tolerate them. Best of all, you can still keep still with one of them. I heard a wonderful thing just off this for a moment. There's a game out there called Sims 2. Do you know about Sims? This is an amazing thing. It's, from my understanding, I learned from this brilliant couple I was with earlier today, the way the game works, it's a computer game where you build your own personality. You take a person and you give them choices, and then they have to go through life. So you'll say what kind of person you want them to be, what kind of aspirations do they have, what kind of friendship, social life do they have, and you keep building it into this computer game, and you build, with someone else, you build a person. And then the game challenges you. It says, what kind of friends would you like to have? And one of the friends that you would say, oh, I'd like many friends, a few good friends. Well, if you have many friends, the game requires that you maintain your friendships by calling the people. You have to remember to make contact. Because if you don't make contact, the number of bleeps representing your friends starts disappearing. So it's quite a game, quite an interesting modern thing. And I've learned mothers and daughters and children have been doing it with their parents, and they're learning all about life through this because it keeps giving you reminders about timing. Isn't it wonderful? It's called Sims 2. I haven't seen it yet. And I think Sims stands for simulating. Okay, so getting back to what a friend is, your friend like you have fires that purge to the bone. They understand. They understand you. You can weep with them, sin with them, laugh with them, pray with them. Through it all and underneath, your friend knows and loves you. What is a friend? A friend is someone with whom you dare to be yourself. Now, what is intimacy? Intimacy is you being yourself, with you first. Into me, see. Look inside me, see me. So if you dare to be yourself, and if you would want to have the highest level relationship, the way to go about doing it, my friends, is to say, I'm going to bring me into this relationship. I'm going to be me. But what's the pitfall? How do you hold on to yourself in a relationship? That's difficult. I'm going to use a metaphor that was used by David Snarch, who I hope to have as a guest soon on the air. He talks about going through the gridlock with a partner. And it's much like climbing a mountain, he says. If you feel in control of yourself, rather than trying to control the terrain and the weather, you can relax and you can enjoy the climb. When you're tense and feeling out of control, the climb seems far more difficult. If you're climbing a mountain, it helps you if you keep in mind that you're never really master the mountain. You master yourself in the process of climbing the mountain. Think about that in your own personality. In your relationship, you're not going to master the relationship. You're going to master yourself in the relationship. The mountain remains the same. It's you who changes. And remember, you have to climb several mountains before you feel confident in yourself. You can't wait until you feel safe and secure before you venture out on your first climb. You can't guarantee yourself success. If you're going to have relationships, you're going to fall down. You're going to flop. You're going to feel miserable. You're going to have to challenge things about yourself that you aren't even going to think were possible. I know a lot of people who have lived alone and stayed alone because they never had to challenge themselves. If you ever want to see what a fool you could be, do it in the eyes of someone else. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So we're going to talk about a concept that has to do with holding on to yourself in a relationship. How do you hang on to yourself? How do you not give yourself away? Well, holding on to yourself means you don't go down with your partner when he or she becomes depressed, despondent, and hopeless. Often this is interpreted as a lack of caring. If you understood or cared about me, you'd feel as bad as I do. But if you've got a partner who feels terrible, you don't have to follow them into depression. In fact, holding on to yourself is the biggest gift you could give your partner. Now, holding on to yourself doesn't necessarily mean that you are just going to be removed. No, that's not what it is. whenever your partner is distraught, you somehow, by holding on to yourself, stabilize the relationship. People who are not differentiated, people who are not separated, people who are too engrossed in each other, they become so reactive that they can't seem to maintain the contact. You wind up turning yourself over. You wind up giving yourself to the other person. You wind up not saying what you really think. You slide into the depression, or you slide into the argument. That's not such good stuff. Holding on to yourself permits a true mutuality. You facilitate your partner's goals at the expense of your own, but only to a certain point. The rest of the way, you hold on to yourself. You have to maintain a clear sense of who you are as you become increasingly intimate with a partner who is becoming increasingly more important in life. Now, this is a very important concept to you. Because if you marry somebody, or you get together with somebody, or you have the first dates or something with someone, that's one level of intimacy. They are not increasingly important to you. But then you get to know them. A year and a half later, you get to know 2 years, 3 years, and as you get to know them, they become more important to you. When they become more important, you are going to be challenged to maintain your own identity because there's a part of you that doesn't want to lose them. So out of fear of your partner leaving you, out of fear of your even being disconnected from your partner, you wind up making sacrifices about who you are. This is where the pitfall is. If instead you maintain yourself, and you maintain yourself as an investment in the importance of this relationship, if you challenge yourself to say, I am doing this not because I don't want to give in, I'm doing this not because I don't want to have an argument, I'm doing this because I love my partner, and I want my partner to be there with me. I don't want to lose them. I don't want to take it and diminish this relationship by just giving them what they want. Maintaining a sense of perspective about yourself is very important in order to do that. You have to understand you're going to get nervous. You're going to get nervous if there's an argument going on between the two of you and you haven't settled it. You know, if you're somebody who likes to control everything, you're going to try to control your partner's feelings. You're going to try to tell them what they shouldn't feel. See, when you're really loving and you have this real intimacy, a funny thing happens. You can let them feel whatever they feel. And you could feel caring, loving, but you could also stand up and say to yourself, I'm just not going to go there with you. So let's say someone's worried about a house. I don't like where I live. I want to live in a house. I want to move. And you say, well, you know, I don't want to put myself through all of that strain, and you understand it. And you think that the need to move, you just don't feel it. Well, you try to consider, you get information, you ask them all about it. You say, well, tell me more about it. Tell me about the discomforts. But you don't ask with the question of, I want to talk you out of it. You ask with the question of, I want to hear what you have to say. I want to consider all this information. Maybe there's stuff I don't know here. Maybe you really are unhappy. You know, so let me hear from you. But you hear, not being convinced and not trying to antagonize, you're there to listen, to get information. Holding on to yourself means maintaining the relationship with yourself. But in order to do it, you got to see where you're weird, too. See, so if you know you get funny about certain things, like, for example, I had a friend who grew up with cockroaches, right? And it was like terrible thing. He hated them. He used to wake up in the morning, turn on the lights, and there were cockroaches all over the walls. It's one of those things. You don't know it as a kid, but as a little kid, especially in some of the slums, these walls move, and it's scary. It's creepy. Cockroaches go everywhere. You know, they're in your food. They're everywhere. And it's a lot of people live that way. So he worked himself out of it, and he got himself into a big penthouse apartment and finally grew up, and he saw one cockroach in his house, and he freaked. Freaked. Wanted to move. Actually got into this, we got to get out of here, because it brought back such panic. Well, getting to know yourself and to be able to say to yourself, wait a minute, that's my history with cockroaches. You know, let me go get a roach motel or do something, or try to free the animal or do something. But you see it differently. It doesn't trigger you the same way. So getting to know yourself and getting to know your own idiosyncrasies is important. It doesn't make your fears any more valid than your partner's fears, or any less. Tolerating the pain of not having an agreement, that's another difficult thing. Imagine your partner and you are fighting about something, or not fighting, disagreeing about something. And you've got to sit with this disagreement. I knew of a couple who had a religious disagreement. It didn't really happen until the baby was born, when the religious stuff started coming up. One was Catholic, one was Jewish. And both wanted to maintain their religion. Now they got the children. Now the child has to be schooled. He thought the child should go to Jewish school. She thought the child should go to Catholic school. Were they going to settle on public school? What were they going to do about it? How are you going to talk the other person out of it? And sure, they did settle in something in the middle, but they were both, for a long time, sticking to what they believe in and trying to negotiate it. During that period of time, they felt like they didn't even know each other. You know, they felt like they were almost at war. And what are you at war about? What is this whole thing about, loving a child or trying to get to know each other? So one of the things that we say about relationships, and we're going to want to hear from you, is holding on to yourself and trying to maintain the integrity of yourself during a relationship is a difficult thing to do. It isn't the same thing as an adversarial stance against your partner. If you're being adversarial, if you're at war, then you're really not convinced that it's what you want. The outcome of self-confrontation around conflicts of interest is usually the exact opposite. It diminishes hostility. See, if you're at war with each other over something, it usually is not the right place to be talking. Why aren't you talking holding hands? What if you're disagreeing, but you're disagreeing with the belief that you should hold hands during this conversation? Well, it's one of the great tests that I've had with couples that I've worked with. I said, okay, you both feel differently about something. Would you please talk and continue to hold hands? Well, it's a simple thing, but you'd be amazed. The couple who is the least invested in a peaceful, the person who's least invested in a peaceful outcome will break their hands away first. Because sometimes people disagree about things over nothing. They're disagreeing just for the sake of having a disagreement, just because they're at war that day. Did you ever feel that way? Did you ever wake up and you feel like you're at war? Okay, who are you going to fight with? And then you're fighting with somebody, and in the middle of it, you're asking yourself, what am I fighting? Why am I having this argument? Why am I so upset? Don't you ask yourself, sometimes you're more upset than at other times? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. It is not easy to hold on to yourself when you're having a disagreement with your partner. It's so easy to just slide in there and just let them have whatever they want. But how are some of the ways that you could do it? Try to see if there is some kind of meaning to the fact that the two of you are having a disagreement. Try to get it. Try to get an idea here. Try to say to yourself, this is not just a disagreement we're having. This is important. And what's important about it is the two of us are trying to push each other a little bit. And the deeper meaning you could always find is that somewhere we want to be closer. See, somehow I want to get better with you. So we may have to work this out, but there's a deeper meaning here. Not to just settle the argument, but to get closer than before. Couples, partners, even best friends can only get closer after they disagree a little. Because you got to bring two different elements to something to make something brand new. You know, it's like, you know, pearls. They come from agitation, right? They come from inside the shell, this little irritation. And then you get this pearl that comes out of it. Yeah, it's an irritant. If you can't regulate your emotions, at least control your behaviors. Don't make things harder than they need to be. Try to keep some perspective. Reactions and situations don't last forever. One of the advantages of getting older in life is that you get to realize this is going to pass. When you're 10 years old and you say, Johnny took my truck and I'm terribly upset, or I can't have that toy and I'm terribly upset. You have some parent who's looking at you and saying, you'll get over it. They know you're going to get over it. But when you're 10 years old, you feel like you're never going to get over it. You feel like you're going to die. One of the things that happen is you get more mature and you get more mature in a relationship is you realize this isn't the end all. This is just a piece. But every little piece, I'm going to try to bring myself in there as honestly as possible to be who I am. That's the advantage. It's important to try to stop the negative tapes. You awfulize something. You know, sometimes when you get in a relationship with somebody, and it could be anywhere, you kind of look at it and you get exasperated and you say how awful it is, how terrible, what a terrible dilemma this is. There are very few terrible dilemmas. There are very few really awful things. They're difficult, just difficult. A man I know is fighting with his landlord. The landlord wants to reclaim the apartment that he's living in because the landlord wants to fix it up and rent it for more money. The landlord is a shade within his legal right to get rid of the tenant. The tenant goes to a tenant lawyer. The tenant lawyer gives the tenant the power to fight back against the landlord. The landlord's within his right. He wants his space and he wants to do something with it. The tenant's within their right. They want to not give up the space. So they're in this thing back and forth, and I'm noticing when I talk to the man, this is his entire life, fighting with his landlord. I'm not saying he should give up the fight, but he can't take it all that seriously. It isn't that serious. Oh, I may have to move. Okay, you have to move. Some people in life have no choice. They're forced to move. You have to move, you have to move, you'll get over it. Knowing how many things you could get over gives you a lot more strength in a relationship. So sometimes you got to soothe yourself, you know, but these quieting, these negative mental tapes, awfulizing things, I can't believe it, how horrible it is. There's an expression that I always like, cage your reptilian brain. Just don't be reactive to the whole thing. Now sometimes, we're going to take your calls after the break, sometimes you got to soothe yourself by taking a break with your partner. Sometimes you need a break. And just a break, the one thing you want to do whenever you take a break is to do something that would be of your own integrity. Don't take a break from one partner by going off and getting drunk. Don't take a break from your partner by going off with somebody else. Take a break and be with yourself as a way of a commitment to the relationship, even though at the moment you don't want to be with your partner. In other words, it's not to run off to something where you will dislike yourself. It's to running off to someplace where you could like yourself even more. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, trying to help you understand. Now, one of the things that is very important to understand is, can you really get to see yourself and know yourself? And what are the things that make you get to see yourself and know yourself? Well, here's a question for you. Your needs or your wants? How do you know yourself if you don't know your needs or your wants? Right? What is a want? What is a need? It's a funny thing about the way people use the word want and need. Want is I want. I want breakfast. I want food. I want to have you love me. I want. We say these want words a lot. Like, what do you want? What do you really want? Now, if you redefine it as saying, now, what do you need? I think the words are almost interchangeable. You see, want and need? Beyond survival, want and need are just ways that you convince yourself to do things. If you say, I want to go on vacation, well, that's one thing. You may or may not do it. I need to go on vacation gives you some extra validation. And now your mind says, oh, but I need this, as if need, the word need has to do with survival, which it really does. People misuse it as a want. But here's something that you should know about yourself. You should know about yourself if your needs or wants, what are your needs or wants? What are they? What do you need in life? What's important to you? What counts and what doesn't count? And what's non-negotiable? In a relationship, what is non-negotiable to you? What do you have that you will not give away? You have a belief? I've spoken to a lot of people who have these very firm beliefs about what is not acceptable. have a funny thing all the time because you speak to a couple and you say to a couple, well, what's acceptable between the two of you? Inevitably, infidelity is not acceptable. You could steal money from my mother, but don't fool around with Jane. You know what I mean? It's like they pick a thing that becomes the one place where everything breaks. I remember one woman who said, I love him so much that if he doesn't propose to me, I'm never going to talk to him again. How do you wrap your mind around that? How do you do that? I love him so much that if he doesn't propose to me, I'll never see him again. So people convince themselves quite often that they think they know what they want and they know what they need. And, of course, there are places where people get scared. The places where you get scared, especially around jealousy, those are places to challenge. And by that, I mean challenge yourself there, too, even in your thinking. Think to yourself, if it were ever discovered, you know, if an infidelity were ever discovered, think of it now, if you have a partner now, would I be done with them completely? Try this one out. If an infidelity were ever discovered, how would I heal us? There's a challenge for your mind. What would I have to do? One would wonder why couples don't prepare themselves in advance, since it's such a big issue. Not what will happen. If somebody, let's say, is an alcoholic, and they swear they'll never drink again, one of the things you plan is, what's going to happen when they go and start drinking again? What do we do? If somebody's a drug addict and they swear they'll never drink, you know, do drugs again, what you plan is, what's going to happen when the person suddenly starts doing drugs? That's what you plan. You don't just say, I'm going to end it all. What's going to happen if my partner gets sick? What's going to happen if they're not available to me? What's going to happen if they don't work? You can consider a lot of things. Well, I say the following. Challenge yourself. Challenge yourself by looking at what it is that you think you can't tolerate, and then create a scenario, like maybe The Sims game, you know, create a scenario where you see yourself recovering from it and recovering with your partner. Now you're talking about a level of intimacy that really steps up the ante. That's only one of the examples. I mean, there's whole other places that people just feel they can't possibly cross over. But you see, the reason you can't cross over it is because of your own earlier stuff. You can get over anything. People who love each other can always step up the ante to a new level of relationship and intimacy. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short station break. And when we come back, just a reminder, by the way, Roberta Atti, who will be back here tomorrow with us, is doing a teaching at the Open Center starting tonight. You may want to call them for information. The Open Center in New York. We're going to be back with you in just a couple of minutes. And then, a spectacular new voice for you.
Hi, I'm Danny Glover.
This is Saul Williams.
And this is Michael Frank from Spearhead.
And this is WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
And this is Reverend Jesse Jackson of the Rainbow Push Coalition. Please call and support WBAI, non-commercial, peace and justice radio in New York.
People moving out. People moving in white because of the color of the skin.
The murmur of the morning breeze up there, the rattle of the milkman on the stairs. Sure, 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 that's music, mighty fine music. The singing of the sparrow in the sky, the barking of the coffee right nearby. There's my favorite melody, you my angel, phoning me. I hear music, mighty fine music. And anytime I think my world is wrong, I get me out of bed and sing this song.
Thank you.
sparking of the coffee right nearby. Sure, sure, that's music, mighty fine music. The murmur of the morning breeze up there, the rattle of the milkman on the stair. There's my favorite melody. You, my angel, for owning me. I am music, mighty fine music. And anytime I think my world is wrong, I get me out of bed and sing.
Fabulous. Brisa Roche. B-R-I-S-A-R-O-C-H-E. Boy, I hear music all the time. Do you hear music in your life? Music everywhere. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to be coming up soon to some very important things happening here at WBAI. Next week, all of our programming will be, or most of our daytime programming will be replaced by the hearings for Condoleezza Rice. And those confirmation hearings are going to be broadcast, and it's a very important that it's carried somewhere. And here WBAI is carrying it, so most of the daytime programming will be gone. So I won't be with you next week. I will be with you this week, Wednesday and Thursday. Following that will be the marathon where we raise money. But I have got such incredible programs planned. Just amazing. There's stuff that we're doing about survival instincts, about how people get through, about the human mind and the human spirit, special guests. Also, Roberta Atti will be working with me on a couple of these projects, so you stay tuned. Check the website at WBAI, and you'll find out when the programs are on. That I'm really looking forward to, some of these specials that we're doing. So, question becomes, you know what I was thinking, though? I was thinking that somebody should do a spoof about cooking with rice. Yes, they should be, you know, what kind of rice pudding are we getting into? What kind of rice pilaf? What kind of chicken and rice are we involved in? I thought maybe it'd be an interesting program for Roberta to make. Cooking with this very interesting society we live in. Hey, 212-209-2900, I have a question for you. What are your needs in a relationship? What part of a relationship can you see yourself not able to deal with? Like, for example, you tell me, oh, there's very little. Maybe I'll just challenge you while we're on the air. Why don't we take some calls, and I'll ask you questions very specifically after you tell me what you think you cannot tolerate. And let's see what's behind this, because if we want to grow, we got to challenge ourselves. If you want to grow up to that other level I'm talking about. Now, again, I'm very happy with you being wherever you want to be. If sex is all it is to you and you want to lay around in bed and have sex all day long and then watch television and eat, fine. Fine. Good. If you want to talk also, good. If you want to get out of bed and have a conversation, it's getting up a little better there. You know what I mean? But I'm perfectly fine any way you want to do it. I just suspect that it could get a lot richer in a relationship, that things become much more interesting. You don't have to take a vacation with your partner. You don't have to go away to some island to find new and interesting. New and interesting is right there in front of you. Try lingering a little longer with your partner. Try seeing who they are. Try looking at them. Open your eyes and just look at your partner. See what that's like. They say, what's wrong? Why are you looking at me? Can you imagine? I mean, people get so used to the avoidance of each other's glare that they're asking, what's wrong? Why are you looking at me? Try looking at them when you make love to them. Try keeping your eyes open. Try seeing what that's like. All new territory. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, actually, I'm just calling up. I heard you recite a poem before, and I was just actually wanting to know the author and the name.
Beran, B-E-R-A-N. Let me see. We'll dig that up for you.
B-E-R-A-N.
Yeah, that's the name. What is a friend, right?
Yes.
Here we go.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, the name is C. Raymond, R-A-Y-M-O-N-D, Beran. Okay, now listen, while we're at it, let me tell you a little experiment I did with this poem. I took the word, what is a friend, And I replaced it with what is a real love partner.
Right.
And now listen to this. If you just substitute the words, like if you did one of those find and searches and replaces, what is a real love partner? It's a person with whom you dare to be yourself. Your soul can be naked with him or her. They seem to ask of you to put on nothing, only to be what you are. You do not need to be better or worse. When you're with your real love partner, you feel like a prisoner feels who's been declared innocent. You do not have to be on guard. You can say what you think as long as it's genuinely you. Your real love partner understands contradictions in your neighbor that lead others to misjudge you. With your real love partner, you breathe freely. You can avow your little vanities and envies and hates and vicious sparks, your meanness and absurdities. In opening them up to your real love partner, they are lost, dissolved, on the wide ocean of his or her loyalty. A real love partner understands. You do not have to be careful. You can abuse them, neglect them, tolerate them by accident for a little while. Best of all, you can be still with him or her. It makes no matter. Your real partner, like you, he or she is like fire that purges to the bone. They understand. They want to understand. You can weep with them, sin with them, laugh with them, and pray with them, as long as you're honest with yourself. And through it all and underneath, your real love partner sees, knows, and loves you. A real love partner? What is a real love partner? Just one, I repeat, with whom you dare to be yourself. So that's replacing the words friend with love partner. And as if you notice, it's interchangeable. Do you have a friend like that?
Yeah, I do. I do.
How lucky you are. What's the difference?
What's the difference between a real love partner and a friend?
Yeah, well, in your life. What's the difference with you? Is this your real love partner or is this your friend that you have?
Actually, when I heard you say the poem, I thought, as you were saying, about friends and people in my life and how true that is. And I actually wanted to, like, write it down and give a few people that.
Good.
But I have that relationship with my husband, who's my real love partner, and that's what we really are. We really are really good friends, and I value that because I see a lot of couples and family and interactions with people, and they don't have that, and I don't know. I couldn't imagine being with a partner and not having that bond.
Well, that's a beautiful thing that you have. Now, here's the problem with the bond, the way most people experience it. Does the bond become, or what is the one thing about you that you probably would not talk to your husband about?
The issue with my husband and I is that we're so close friends that we have a hard time with our sexual relationship.
Exactly.
So you asked me, like, what would I think that's an area where we have such a hard time, and we're trying to deal with it, but so I would think that something that I wouldn't want to talk to him about would be in that realm.
Okay, now here's the idea. You want to be more intimate with him. Sex may or may not be important, but obviously something happens.
Right.
When people become too close friends or very close friends, they very often lose the sexuality between them. In fact, I know so many bonded couples that don't have a romantic life, a sexual
right.
romantic life. So one wonders, what's the difference? Why would people that close, in bed together, holding together, naked together, kissing each other, looking at each other, touching each other, why are they not aroused?
Right.
Well, here's the answer. Because they have no room for anger. You see, if there's no room for anger in the relationship, there's no room for passion. Then what happens is you become like a couple, you become like a, like brother-sister. No, even brother-sister has room for anger.
Right.
You just become more familiar. It's almost like you're living with a perfect mommy or a perfect daddy.
Right.
So getting anger into the relationship is the essential solution and looking for where you allow anger in. I've recommended to many couples that I've worked with pillow fights.
Right.
I say, go get a pillow and just go have a pillow fight downstairs. You know, whack each other with pillows, and you do it, and of course, not hurting the other person in any way, but just to stimulate the aggression. And it's something worth paying attention to.
Right.
So if you don't want to talk about the sex because you don't want to hurt his feelings, that's one thing. I can understand that.
What we do is we talk about it, but we throw the blame back and forth. You know, like, we won't intimate. We haven't had sex since August, and we're both very young and healthy, and but we sort of, you know, like, well, he won't initiate it with me, so why should I initiate it with him?
I understand.
So there's that underlying spite, but we're only hurting ourselves.
Have you ever had sex with yourself in front of your partner?
No.
Hmm.
See, what you asked me before about what would you not discuss with this, what you asked me before, and that's something that, you know, I guess I feel like if I'm doing that with myself, that's like really intimate. And
well, let me tell you what happens. In a lot of, I've worked with a couple of sex researchers, and a lot of people who are family therapists have also done a lot of research around sex, and they find one of the ways you break through the barrier is that it's actually recommended. It's not doing it against the partner. It's doing it to show the partner that you're a sexual being as well. And they do that. I mean, that's one of the solutions.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's so many different challenges. But you see, what it does is you have to challenge yourself and your own inhibitions. You got to take a challenge to your own. I mean, I know, if you ever want, I know people who work on this problem exclusively.
Right, I would like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you call my office and I'll get you the person of one of the people I think you would consult with would be just the best.
Thank you.
All righty.
All right. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good. Well, you see, that started it off very well. That's exactly what happens. Best friends mean safe with each other. But there's always some sign that something is broken down somewhere. And it may be worth recovering. Or you just live without it. You live without sex. That's fine. Have a good partner and don't have sex. That's fine. Sex is good. It's not the whole thing. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille on the air.
Yeah, hi, Armand.
Hi there.
Yeah, you know, I had this great relationship going on for about 8 years. And actually, the reason why I called, I sometimes got a bone to pick because until she went to your office, it went along fairly well.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And your office destroyed it completely. And I really feel a loss.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I have such faith in you, except this really confuses me.
Sure, sure, I can fully understand. So you've got a relationship for 8 years, and then your partner goes to therapy somewhere, and this happens to so many people, and somehow the partner sees some part of herself that she doesn't like in the relationship, and somehow it doesn't work. Have you ever tried to do it with her? I mean, did you ever say to her, look, let's...
Oh, yeah, I was more than willing to try all different things, but she just cut me off cold.
Wow. And you never hit her or did anything like that, right?
No, there was no violence.
I can't imagine. I can't understand why that took place.
It did take place. In fact, I took it to your office.
Yeah, no, I hear. So
I'm as a person and your wisdom, I respect gratefully, but what had occurred in these circumstances really, for quite some time, ripped me up.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, I certainly understand the way you feel. I would feel the very same way. Do you know what I mean? I bring somebody to somebody out of confidence and trust, and I hope it's going to work out, but then we discover things, and the other person opens up something and says, no, I've discovered myself. I wasn't happy the way I was, which is why she came in. Whoever she wasn't happy.
Yeah, but she's still not happy with herself either.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Sure.
She may have labeled me as the reason of her unhappiness, but actually I wasn't.
And clearly nobody is anybody's reason for unhappiness.
You know
so
what
listen,
I mean?
Yeah, so listen, if you could ever get the two of you back together on any level to even come back and talk about it, I would love to, but sometimes...
I would
in a minute, huh?
speak about it. In fact, I was seeing one of your therapists, and I made that proposal, but that's not the guidance this was presented.
Yeah, I understand. Sometimes you just can't control all the factors, because it does involve very individual people. Yeah. But I'll tell you something, you know, I know you said you had a relationship that ended, but your spirit doesn't sound that far down. You sound very much
down.
Over.
I'm just...
You're just acting happy?
It's down. Believe me.
Have you gone anywhere with your life since that relationship? Have you done anything? Have you been anywhere new? Have you?
Not significant. Yeah. I had the power to do what I, you know, to move along, but, no, I feel the loss, and actually, even last night, I woke up with a nightmare in the middle of the night, and it's been quite some time.
Well, now it sounds like there's something going on inside you that's a little more than just a reaction to this thing.
Oh, I certainly have my own problems and issues. I realize that.
Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking if you're having a nightmare in the middle of the night, and, you know, this is plaguing you so much that there's got to be...
This has been plaguing me for quite some time.
Yeah.
It's reasonable now, and I'm not as stressed out as I once was, but that doesn't mean it went away.
I understand. Listen, if
you know, this was a close relationship, and I had realized this is very hard to find, and I didn't, even right now, I'm not of the opinion it could be replaced.
Yeah.
It worked out that well. I'm not of the opinion it could be replaced.
I understand your point. I understand what you're saying. If I could be of any further help, please, I'm sorry for your unhappiness, but people do have their own...
Oh, I understand. Everyone's going to do what they're going to do.
So thank you.
I understand that.
Thank you, and feel free. What's your first name, by the way?
Joe.
Joe, feel free to call me, okay?
Thank you.
Sure. Armand Amelia was, you know, it's a funny thing because what Joe's saying is so true. So many times, people will go for counseling and they don't come around, you know, come out of it saying, unless the person's violent or something, they don't come out saying, you've got no therapist, says get rid of your boyfriend. They don't say that. But what does happen is the person uncovers themselves and they find out it's not what they really want, that this isn't the picture. And so they move on to try to do better. Now, the other thing is about recovering from relationships. The concept that you could never recover is another one of the illusions. Because we're built to recover. Partners die. In all of nature, partners die. And we're built to recover from the death of someone we care about, even if it's an emotional death. So the illusion that you can't get past it, it's just an illusion. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Let's take another call. 212-209-2900. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Hi. I think I have to switch up the station.
Yes, you have to switch up.
Can you hear me, please?
Yes, I can.
Okay, so there were two things that I wanted to make a comment about. One was that what you started the program with, which was fixating on something when you're in a relationship. It can be a hard thing.
Yep.
My feeling is, and this is not my thought, Buddha said it hundreds of years ago, and the thought is that fixating on anything at all, any emotion, any person, any thought, any belief, anything is hard. Not fixating is the easy part.
What do you mean by fixating?
By having a fixed idea about something.
You think that's hard?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Not being fixed is what allows us to be happy in any situation.
Well, what about being...
Words,
yes, I understand,
words,
yeah.
Okay. So if you are angry, that takes work to keep on being angry. Whereas letting go of anger is actually the easy thing.
Well, let me disagree with you for a minute. Hold on a second.
Okay.
What you're saying is what the people who don't like getting angry say. The people who don't like getting angry usually have a judgment about anger, and they say, holding on to anger is no good, you got to let it go. But those people, I also find, are usually very depressed because they can't confront anger. So you develop a philosophical belief that fits the you know, your own kind of strange pathology. Not yours, but everybody does. So the ones who are who have all this repressed anger will go around telling everybody you should let go of anger. The ones people who are poor tell everybody they should give up their belongings. You know, people will in general tend to adopt a philosophy that serves the way they are. Now, I understand from your background, you come from a background where people are used to relinquishing emotions and feelings. So the question is, should we have them at all?
Should we have emotions at all?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, of course.
But
we
only the good
ones.
We should
have emotions. Oh, we should have emotions. We should just not believe in them so much that we have a hard time letting go of them.
I agree with you completely on that.
People first take too much importance. They give too much importance to an emotion. And then they have a hard time letting go of it. Just like you said, we are built to recover. If you take it at a smaller scale, if you don't take it at such a big scale, you know, we are built to recover from death.
What's your name?
I'm Dr. Gujral. I've spoken with you once before.
I thought so. I thought I recognized your voice.
Yeah, I am not the British by bringing up. And a lot of people feel like that. It's not just you patients at all. Feel like that because I often quote Buddha because I've read him extensively. I've not been brought up by that philosophy, but I have realized that people think of big crises and they think they can get over that. But
yes.
They don't use the same philosophy in their everyday life. They don't think that the small struggles are really not small struggles if you don't make them struggles. They are passing by instances in life.
I know. I understand it from your observer's point of view. You are speaking very wise words. But when you're in the middle of it, somebody telling you don't be in the middle of it doesn't go anywhere. If you're a kid who's a teenager who's madly in love with the boy down the block, and the boy down the block is suddenly seen touching the other girl down the block, you are so outraged, you're so far out of your mind, and then your mother comes along and says, don't worry about it, you're taking it to its, you know, it's, don't take it so seriously, let it go, it's going to be better, in 10 years from now you won't even remember him. It does no good at all for the kid. The kid is heartbroken.
No philosophy really works in a crisis. These are things that you got to believe in and work on in terms of, building yourself.
Yeah, I understand you see that, too.
What you do in your crisis is what your belief has been in your stable time.
Listen, we have to get going. I want to thank you for calling in once again.
Okay, thank you. Nice talking.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And happy birthday to Patricia Puma, by the way. It's her birthday today. How special that is. And we are going to be back with you, my friends, tomorrow at 1 o'clock with Roberta Atti. If you want a copy of today's program or the previous two programs on the art of intimacy, you call 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. Again, Roberta Atti at the Open Center starting tonight, and I will be back with you tomorrow with Roberta at 1 p.m. Oops. Well, that takes care of that. I guess we're not doing that one too well today, Michael. I'm going to have to leave it with you.
All right. Well, thank you very much. The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille returns tomorrow at 1 p.m. You are tuned to listener-supported, commercial-free community radio WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM. 36 degrees at 1:55. If you're just tuning in, I'd like to welcome you to this listener-sponsored, commercial-free radio station. Coming up at 2 p.m. will be the Arts Magazine. Right now, stay tuned for Pacifica Headline News with Verna Avery Brown.
You're listening to Pacifica Headline News. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Here's what's happening in the news at this hour. Iraqi Prime Minister Ayad Alawi admitted today that some areas of Iraq will probably be too unsafe to take part in the January 30th elections, his first public acknowledgement that the government would not be able to exert control in key areas controlled by resistance fighters. Alawi promised, however, to increase the size of the Iraqi army in the face of a loyal resistance, whose latest victims included 13 Iraqis killed by two bombings. Alawi also spoke by telephone today with President Bush for about 10 minutes to reaffirm the importance of holding the elections as scheduled, according to the White House. In a news conference, Alawi said the government had allocated $2.2 billion to expand the army from 100,000 to 150,000 troops and provided with new weaponry. Iraq's armed forces are poorly trained and often under-equipped. A tsunami survivor rescued after 15 days adrift in the Indian Ocean recounted today how he lived on coconuts that floated by, tearing them open with his teeth. Indonesia, meanwhile, said it hoped to ease the bottleneck of aid flights by opening a second airport north of Sumatra Island. Also today, Indonesia's military chief extended a new ceasefire offer to rebels in Aceh province, the region hardest hit by the December 26 earthquake and tsunami. Rebels in the area welcomed the proposal by General Indrianatono Suwarto.